This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's Porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Michael, can you believe that this is the 10th season of Rocketship.fm?
Honestly, I really can't, right? We've produced over 450 episodes in the last few years. Back in season one, well, I don't know, we weren't even thinking of it as season one. We were just producing episode after episode.
Yeah, and looking back, I mean, Rocketship's gone in a number of different directions with seasons. We've had seasons on product journeys, most recently product failures before that.
Yes, we've even done a deep dive into understanding more about the personal journeys that people are enduring in product. Like when we gave a microphone to a handful of product people for literally months and we just recorded and tagged along for their journeys.
Yeah, heck, we even took a bit of a diversion and focused on my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio, as it sought to become the blockchain capital of the world.
Hey, whatever happened to that?
Let's just say it's a good thing that we only did one season on that one. Anyway, we're now on to season 10, and as always, we're going to go in a little bit of a different direction. This time, you, the listener, are going to be at the heart of every episode.
That's right. This season is all about workplace confessionals, that awkward moment, the horror stories, the sticky situations where you may need some advice, right? We'll be taking your confessions and dissecting them a bit.
Yes, together, and also with various friends of Rocketship. So, sit back, buckle up, because it's about to get a little weird this season on Rocketship.fm.
Welcome to Rocketship.fm.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We're your hosts, Michael Sacca
and Mike Belsito.
Okay, Michael, are you ready to hear some confessions?
Oh, I'm definitely ready. Let's get right into it.
All right. Well, this first confession, it's coming from a director of product at a consumer tech company in the Midwest. And yeah, we should say we want you to really share some juicy stories. So we're not sharing your personal identity. So don't worry. Your secret is safe with us. Instead, we've actually hired voice actors to portray your stories. And so this first story, which we're calling Our Needy Customer, well, here it is.
I've been a director of product at our company for the past 3 years. It's been really rewarding, and I've had the chance to work with some amazing people. My biggest challenge at the moment, however, is how to properly manage things with one of our biggest customers. This particular customer was one of our earliest customers, and to be fair, they're a big deal to us. While they're not our largest customer by revenue anymore, they were when they first came on board, and they're on our customer advisory board, which I manage. They're the customer that we often refer others to. We blast their logo on all sorts of sales materials, touting the relationship. Their company is a flashy name, so to speak. So having them as a flagship customer definitely means something. Sometimes, though, it seems as though they view themselves as being much more than a truly valued customer. It's not unusual for them to make very specific, small product tweak requests. In the very beginning, before my time, we'd bend over backwards to try to accommodate them. But as we grew, we stopped doing that as much, as we had so many other customers making requests, and honestly, we all knew that it really wasn't the right thing to do. Even still today, I just got an email from this customer that was really critical about our company's commitment to continuing to develop our product, as the changes we've recently made weren't to their liking. They cited how they've shared in customer advisory board meetings what was really important to them, and that we're now ignoring their advice. In truth, they have brought up certain feature requests that we're not moving forward with, but we've made those decisions because this particular customer is one of the only ones that had been particularly vocal about that request, and it just doesn't fit with our long-term strategies for the product. I've actually explained our future product roadmap, both in a customer advisory board meeting and to this customer directly, but it feels as if it's falling on deaf ears. This last email concerns me, and I've shared it with my boss and the CEO, who actually was the person who originally closed the deal with this customer in the first place. On one hand, I feel like how we've handled the situation is right, as does my boss. But I certainly don't want to be seen as the person who's responsible for us losing our landmark customer. How should we handle customers who feel like they have way more say over product decisions? How can we help these customers understand that we may not always do as they ask, without, of course, souring the relationship? I don't even know if you're looking to answer questions like this, and if not, consider this my confession to vent. But at this point, I'm open to any ideas.
Okay, so there's definitely a lot to unpack here. Well, today we have somebody who Rocketship listeners should be very familiar with by now. You've actually heard him a few times in the past. In fact, he's made cameos on each of the past two seasons. That's Ben Foster, the founder of Prodify, chief product officer at Whoop, and co-author of the book Build What Matters.
So, Ben, when you first saw this, what crossed your mind? Have you ever experienced anything like this before?
Yeah, you know, I have run into this situation a bunch of times. In fact, I'm trying to think of times from my career when I didn't have customers that, matched this archetype, if you will. But I think that there's a couple interesting things that stand out to me. I'd say number one is that the customer seems to perceive that this is somehow their product, or that they have some sort of like reason that they should be able to control the product roadmap. And in reality, there's just no way that that's the case. Like, you know, as the product manager, you're the one responsible for getting product market fit. And there's a reason that it's called product market fit, not product solution fit or customer, product fit and things like that. So, you've got to make sure that it's the right product for the market going forward. What's interesting about this particular situation, though, is it seems like there is some value that's being exchanged from both parties, independent of whether they're actually taking the product in a good direction. And it's worth at least considering, I would say, whether that value exchange is worthwhile. You know, there's a quid pro quo, which is they want to be able to give you some sort of guidance on the roadmap or ask for a few kind of like minor product tweaks. And as long as they're minor and they're not kind of like things that you would need to as a product manager, maintaining the simplicity of the project, to completely veto, then it may actually be worth saying yes to some of these kinds of things because of the marketing value that you're going to get from having this really, you know, valuable logo that's there, that's something that's going to help you to go win future business. And sometimes the reality is it's not just your product and the features and the capabilities, but also the reference accounts and things like that, depending on the market, that may actually be the biggest growth lever for you as a business. And so I think it's okay if you acknowledge it, but you've got to account for it that way as well. So if you were going to take that approach, you might want to say, hey, whatever development work we're doing for this particular customer should not be coming at the expense of other development work that we can do. Like maybe we staff for this independently and we bill this back to the customer, or we bill it back to the marketing department if we need to, you know, for that work that's happening, as long as, again, the product complexity isn't getting taken out of control.
It's almost as if this has been something that's happening that they've just avoided. And it's like nobody's talking about it. Everybody's sort of dancing around it. But let's be open about it. Let's actually like call this what it is. And then we might be able to be productive.
It sounds like we're kind of on the same page with the CEO, but not really aligned in the fact that they still felt like that they were they would be taking the burden of firing this customer potentially by pushing back. But really, the CEO should be aligned in that decision.
Hey, Ben, what I was going to ask you, I was curious about if they had left out the part of this being this big landmark customer. Let's just say it was a good sized customer, you know, but not there's not the history there. There's not the, you know, the CEO closed them as the first customer. Would your advice change?
It's a great question. I think it might a little bit, right? You know, there is some sort of like, you know, relationship that's been built up between the two parties. And, you know, each one of you has maybe done some, you know, service for the other one and helping them to get to where they are right now. I think that's all, you know, worthy of acknowledgement. And I think that there's something that can be really powerful there where, you know, they could help you in future ways that maybe just a large customer who didn't have this kind of relationship with you might not be willing to help you, right? You know, in terms of being those reference accounts and things along those lines. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's your job as a product manager to not look in the direction of the past, but to look in the direction of the future. And, you know, when you think about the direction of the future, the question you have to ask yourself is, you know, is this customer going to help us to achieve what we need to achieve down the road? And if the answer is yes, then great, you know, invest into that relationship. And if the answer is no, they're actually kind of like holding us back in some ways, then, you know, you might look for interesting ways in which you can continue to have a good, solid business relationship, but don't have it be one where, you know, it will not be a valid excuse later to say, the reason we lost product market fit or the reason we got leapfrogged by some competitor is because we were doing all of these things for this one-off customer. Like, that's still a failure at the end of the day, and you've got to make sure as a product person that you're not allowing that to happen.
All right, we're going to pause right here and we're going to hear a word from our sponsors. Before the break, we heard one workplace confession about that self-important customer that they thought they had a little more pull than they actually had.
Yes, and now we're going to hear about a completely different situation, but it's another tricky one. And again, we have hired a voice actor to play the situation out a bit. We're calling this one Roadmap Hell.
I took on the role of product manager at my company about 3 months ago. For context, we're a young, three-year-old, growing B2B SaaS company with about 150 employees, half of which was probably hired in the last year alone. Our product team is small. There are three of us product managers that report up to a VP. We're all responsible for certain aspects of the product, and we each work with our own respective team of designers, developers. But our team is expected to grow as the company continues to grow, and given that we just closed a $10 million round of funding, that growth should be coming quickly. Our VP of product unexpectedly left 2 weeks ago, and our CEO is set on not hiring anybody until the new year. Yet we're in the midst of 2021 product planning, and I've been asked to lead the rest of the team in the process. Here's the problem. My PM team and I feel like we have a good enough handle on things to share a true product strategy and create a roadmap based on that strategy. But our CEO, who doesn't have a product background, but is very adept at sales and marketing, wants something very specific with timelines. This has always been a point of contention in the past with the CEO and our VP, and I believe that may have been a reason why he left, although he didn't say that. Last year, our VP was adamant that we shouldn't be setting dates in our roadmap, but the CEO was adamant that the board needed to see these dates. Ultimately, our VP decided to fall on his sword and create a roadmap with clear deliverable dates. We did hit those dates, but many times it required all-nighters and stretching ourselves so thin, simply for hitting these arbitrary milestones that weren't really tied to anything specific. We simply were pushed to hit these dates because these were the dates we were all committed to. Of course, when we set those dates in the first place, we have very little information to go off of, but we're forced to come up with something. So now I am being put in the same position our VP was in. I feel very comfortable with setting dates for what we're about to start, as long as we have a lot more information from our customers and our designer developers have a great handle on what needs to be done. But beyond the next 60 to 90 days, I have a problem with setting specific delivery dates. We don't have enough information on what will actually need to be built. And honestly, so much changes with our market that I'm not quite sure what we think we need to deliver in 9 months will even be viable. I don't get paid enough to have the kind of toe-to-toe war our VP had with our CEO last year. Kidding, but not really. And ultimately, our VP lost that battle. So what do I do? Do we create that roadmap and set specific arbitrary delivery dates, knowing that so much will change and we'll be forced to hit those dates? Or is there any hope for convincing our sales-minded strategy that the board doesn't actually need a roadmap with a year's worth of delivery dates? Please help.
Okay, this is a rough situation.
Yes, but again, I've been here as a product person. I know it's not necessarily the right thing to have a timed roadmap in all cases.
But
sometimes it just feels like there's not a great way around it.
Yeah, well, let's bring in Ben Foster for his take on this.
You know, it is a painful one. There's a reason it's called roadmap hell. We all run into this as well. Here's what I would think. I gotta say, I actually kind of understand where the CEO is coming from on this. And I know that, you know, half the listeners on this are gonna probably hit
they're saying boo, boo.
Yeah, I know, boo. But here's why, right? Like, I mean, you know, here's the thing, right? Other teams think of it from this perspective. Like, the sales team has to sign up for quotas that they're going to hit. They don't know exactly which accounts they're going to close and exactly which accounts they're not going to close. And it's actually an even bigger deal for them because their livelihoods are on the line, right? Like, they're not just going to get a hand slap if the roadmap doesn't get hit. Like, they will get fired, pure and simple. And so, you know, the reality is, like, marketing has to sign up for these things. Sales have to sign up for these things. And somehow in the world of, like, agile product development theory and things like that, we kind of got away with for this period, like, no, we don't have to, like, commit to anything. We'll just work on the right stuff at the right time. Well, like, what in your personal life would you ever be willing to kind of, like, let some sort of, like, contractor or whatever do that way? You know, you're going to get a house built for you and you're like, well, when's it going to be done? They're like, I don't know. I'm just going to work on the right stuff until it's done. You know, like I wouldn't work with you, you know, so I'm going to find somebody else who is willing to commit to that. So, like, I at least get where the CEO is coming from on this. But yes, there are a lot of reasons you may not be able to actually hit those dates. And I think this is where the rubber hits the road, right? Like, engineering could take longer than expected. You could learn through validation that something you thought was a good idea was actually a bad idea. You could change your mind between now and then about the priorities and decide to just work on something completely different for, you know, some new reason that pops up that you didn't expect. How many roadmaps where there were dates for that got thrown completely out the window when COVID hit, right? I mean, you know, and rightfully so. So I think it's okay that there are plans as long as you're really clear about how those plans can and cannot be used. So a couple suggestions here. I'd say one of them is get crafty with the presentation a little bit. Like, it's okay to maybe have, like, dates, but have those dates be a little bit looser. So instead of a specific date, you know, indicate a month. Instead of a specific month, you indicate a particular quarter in which it's going to get done. And then what is it that's actually going to get done? Maybe you can be a little bit more loose with what the definition of completeness for a particular product is. So you can say, hey, we're going to solve this problem, or here's the theme of things that we're going to be working on, and we're going to deliver some sort of solution along these lines. But the details are sort of, like, yet to be worked out. And then that way you're getting kind of, like, the advantage of both stating something for the record about what you're going to deliver and being able to kind of, like, tie that to business outcomes maybe at the end of the day, but not sort of, like, tying your hands so much that you don't really get the benefits of agile development, along that path. So that's one thing. And then the second thing that I would do is I think that there's an opportunity here to have the right discussion with the CEO to realize that the CEO needs to commit something back to you in return. And this is like the most important part. So say it directly, like the only way that I can guarantee that we deliver X is to lock it in no matter what the research shows. Is that what you want to do? Are you saying that this is a thing that we're going to deliver no matter what, even if we do the research and our homework and we learn from customers that this is not in fact what they want, that you still want me to hit this date anyway? And like, you know, obviously it's kind of like a rhetorical question, but, you know, rather than you just saying flat out no, you're kind of like putting the ball back in the CEO's court, you know? Or you can say, are you committed to not adding anything new to this roadmap for the next year? If I commit to all these dates, these are things that I think we might be able to hit. You know, that would be nice if we could, but the way that we would be able to hit those is if we have complete loss of flexibility to change our minds or add anything new. And so, you know, is that the kind of like way that you want to run this company in such a way that we sort of like are very definitive about what we're going to go work on, but we lose that level of flexibility? That's a trade-off, and that's a CEO level trade-off. Where do you want to be on the spectrum? Right. So those are the kinds of questions that I think you can ask and the kinds of conversations you can have that are like constructive, without just sort of like saying, you know, either yes or no, I'm either going to, you know, stand my ground and refuse to like, you know, submit dates and probably find yourself the same place in 2 weeks as the last VP of product, you know, or you can say yes to all these dates and then you're, you know, you're the one who's on the hook because you never really clarified what the complications of doing that would be.
I love the concept of talking about trade-offs because the CEO is constantly thinking about like, well, we could be doing X or Y. And it's like, hey, look, that we could commit to all of these things and even guarantee it. But what that means is that 6 months down the road, when we get new information and there's something else we all get excited about, we can't do it. So let's at least, can we agree that if that situation were to happen, something would fall off. Like we agree that that can happen, right? It's like the more that you can get the CEO to maybe agree that, okay, this might not be set in stone completely because there could be new information that comes. It might be in the form of competitive information or what have you. So I think that might actually be really helpful in a conversation with the CEO.
Yeah. I have a feeling the CEO, the board is a crutch here for the CEO. And I think it's the CEO that wants the dates.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I would say that where I've seen the board get involved on this though, sometimes is not so much about the delivery of dates for particular kind of features. They don't care about the features. They don't even understand how the product works or what it is half the time, right? You know, I think that what they care about is the business outcomes that are going to be derived from the money that they're dumping in. They're like, hey, I know exactly how much money I'm spending on R&D here. What am I going to get out in terms of business outcomes? Yep. And so the reason that the CEO is probably looking for this, I think, at least in my experience, is, you know, one in which you're sort of saying, okay, well, I know that these are the business outcomes, or at least I expect that these are going to be the business outcomes of launching this new feature. Maybe it opens up a new market to us. Maybe it closes a few, you know, specific accounts, et cetera. So when is that going to happen? It's really the question of like, when are we going to see these outcomes rather than the specific output from the individual teams?
Also sounds like this person is being potentially, I know they're filling a gap, but they have a potential to move up here or at least play a bigger role within the organization if they're willing to kind of step up. But with stepping up means putting your name on the line and taking on that responsibility. So they could also see this as an opportunity if they want.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why the CEO chose this person to lead the process versus the other people on the team. So I think it's great to want to try to tackle this as a challenge. But yeah, it sounds like it's probably not a challenge they've had to go through before. Yeah. You know, it's like maybe before they were, the roadmap is handed down or we had a role in the process and now let's execute. Now you're kind of learning that the grass is not so greener on that VP side, but it could be an awesome situation. I hope that they're able to work it out and hope that they're able to get on the same page with the CEO. That's one thing's for sure. They do need to get on the same page and not just sort of avoid this issue.
Yeah. We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. The first two workplace confessionals of season 10 are in the books. And we figured at the end of each episode, we could sort of recap things a bit. Mike and I will share what we learned from the confession and our guest take on the situation. One big takeaway, so we can leave you with something a little more actionable, right? Something you could use in your own life. So what do you think, Mike? What did you learn today?
It's that we should remember that our work isn't us. These are two separate things. It's important to create some separation. In the very first confession, the needy customer, you heard the person making the confession. They made a comment that he or she, they didn't want to be responsible for the company losing this landmark customer. But this is a product person. I mean, no matter what happens, and I'm talking to you, whoever you are out there that made this confession, it's not your fault. It's not on you. If you're doing what you think is right for the company, customers will come and go, and that's okay. It's going to happen, but you shouldn't take that burden on personally.
That's a really good one, right? And yes, so often we each take on so much of our work that our work almost becomes us. Things can feel very personal. And hey, it's a good thing that we take our work so seriously, but there's a fine line between taking work seriously and feeling over responsible for things that are really out of our hands.
All right, Michael. So what is your big takeaway?
I'm going to go with something from the Roadmap Hell confession, and that's in the world of product, it's all about trade-offs. Take a product roadmap, for example. We can set that roadmap in stone, but there's a cost to doing so. It means that we won't be able to add anything to the roadmap, even if we get new information that suggests we should. And of course, that is the product manager's job, is to collect that information and make sure that we're always working on the highest priority item. And if we do decide that something new is so important and it should get added to the roadmap several months in, guess what? Something's got to give. Something we were planning to build will now fall to the wayside. Again, a trade-off, right? And by the way, if something does fall to the wayside, that's okay, so long as your team decides it's the right thing to do. But we should all be mindful of the fact that we're dealing with constant trade-offs and be on the same page about that. The product team, the executive team, heck, even the board in this case.
Yeah, trade-offs don't seem like a great thing because, you know, it implies that you're giving something up, but in the world of product, it's a part of doing business. It's just the reality we live in.
Well, that about wraps things up for today. We sure hope you enjoyed episode one of this new season, Workplace Confessionals. If you did, hey, tell a friend, forward it on. It'll be a big help to help us get the word out.
Yes, for sure. And a big thanks goes to Ben Foster for helping talk these through with us today. And if you liked what you heard from Ben, we definitely encourage you to check out his book, Build What Matters. You'll learn a lot, that's for sure.
And we want your workplace confessionals, whether they're awkward situations, horror stories, situations you just need advice on. Let's hear them. Just email us at team@rocketship.fm. That's team@rocketship.fm. Thank you so much for listening to Rocketship.fm. It is your support that keeps the show going. If you can, take a second and leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps out the show so much. We're also part of the Podglomerate Network. And if you'd like to listen to more great shows from the Podglomerate, go to thepodglomerate.com to see the full show listings.
Rocketship.fm is produced in partnership with Product Collective, a community for product people. Go to productcollective.com and get access to our weekly newsletter, live video interviews, Slack community, product job board, and a whole lot more. Again, just go to productcollective.com.